I'm Matthew Petty and this is Intersection. All this week we're exploring Paramore, Orlando's historically black neighbourhood. A soccer stadium is on its way to Paramore and with it new businesses and residents. It's a neighbourhood in flux. I caught up with Orlando City Commissioner Regina Hill at the ribbon cutting for a row of shops to talk about the neighbourhood's past and its future. Regina Hill, you've lived in Orlando pretty much all of your life. What are your memories of Paramore?
When I came to Orlando, I came here at 9 years old to Paramore. Lived in Paramore for over 30 years. And what I remember about Paramore, of course, I remember the great neighbors, what it was to be a kid here and go to our community park, being a latchkey kid. It being safe. And then at times there, when I became somewhat of an adult, I remember being a place that unfortunately had turned into a place of gloom and despair.
You mentioned that we're on the verge of some pretty huge changes. What goes through your mind when you look at the idea of something like a soccer stadium coming in, a new school, new businesses?
I tell you what goes through my mind when I think about all the great exciting things that's happening here in Paramore. Where people was hopeless, now people are hopeful because of the economic development and the venues that now are going to be here in Paramore because of job opportunities. Also with the school, it becoming a educational hub right here in Paramore. Not where we only have the Paramore Community School, but eventually we'll have Valencia, we'll have UCF, and not just for the youth, but also for the parents. And with that meaning, the parents now will be able to have skills and trades and college education so that they can now become viable taxpayers and also support families, not on on entry-level incomes, but of medium and high income.
Commissioner Hill, we're sitting inside a church and a building that's been, you know, nicely redone. It's a beautiful space here. You know, just a stone's throw away, there's still kind of boarded up buildings. There's houses which need work. What do you think needs to be done to bring residents, further out in the neighbourhood, the same kind of housing opportunities that you have sort of on the outskirts of Paramore?
Well, it's funny you say that because this very same building was a building that had a D on it for demolition, right? So just because it might be something that's not a pretty picture now, the more that you pour into it, the more that you invest in it, guess what you have? A beautiful flower. So that's what I think will have to happen on the outskirts of Paramore and some of the boarded up buildings here, is ask those that own these properties. Most of them are private investors or out of town landlords that I'm tasking them to come and start, instead of take those boards off, start building those apartment buildings.
How much does the city need to put in terms of resources into housing specifically? Because if you're talking about, for example, low-income housing, you know, sometimes investors might look and say there's not a huge return on that. So how do you, you know, what part does the city need to play in making sure that people who live here, you know, have a good place to live?
Well, of course, I'll be honest with you. I'm not looking for a whole lot of low-income houses. I'm looking for mixed-income houses where we have people of all social economic paths living in Paramore. We don't want to create a place where only low income and poverty exists. We're trying to revitalize that, and we want people to know that their next door neighbor might be a lawyer and they can aspire to be a lawyer. We have housing programs. Right now, myself, my office is creating a financial literacy program. We're creating, along with different organizations, partnering with them on credit repair. So first we have to build the people so that they can be able to have sustainable growth. And that's what it's truly about. It's not about wealth building. It's about sustainability.
Just talking about the soccer stadium real quick, you know, some people we've talked to have said they're concerned about the stadium kind of physically cutting things off, like, just because it's such a big it's such a big structure, it's going to be on that street. Are you concerned that there's going to be sort of haves and have-nots once that stadium goes up?
Well, I think throughout America we have haves and have-nots. Right now, because of it's a Orlando City soccer stadium that's going up, my job is to make sure the have-nots have and be their voice and make sure that they're included. And those that have, to understand. My credo is, too much is given, much is required. So those that much is given to, I try to make sure that they become great community stakeholders to help the have-nots and build them up.
Is that a balancing act, though? You know, if you look at what the city's trying to do with its, you know, sports and entertainment complex and then what residents in Paramore are asking for, is that a fine line you need to walk as a commissioner?
The District 5 city commissioner is a fine line because it is the tales of two cities. I oversee all of downtown Orlando, the venues, and of course, Paramore, Mercy Drive, Ivy Lane, Carver Shores, and then you jump to Metro West where you have $400,000 or $500,000 homes. So I invited. I think I was prepared for it because as a nurse, I worked at Orlando Regional for 13 years. And every time I went into a room, I was going to get somebody new with a different problem, with a different issue, and a different diagnosis that I had to solve or actually a different personality. So it's the same thing. Versus nursing 15 people, I just happen to be the community nurse now for 52,000. So no, it isn't difficult. When you're a servant, you serve all people. So I really enjoy being a servant in the tale of two cities.
One other concern that some residents have told us they have is that you walk down the street, you see these corner stores, a lot of folks depend on these for their groceries. And some people have told us they're a little worried that, you know, once new business comes in, rents will go up, maybe the grocery stores will go away. So once things start to happen in Paramore, once things start to build up and improve, how do you make sure there's access to affordable groceries and that kind of thing in Paramore?
Well, actually, and see, you touched a great topic there, is what's needed in Paramore and something that the mayor and my office is working on is an actual real grocery store in Paramore. That's needed. I love the corner stores because people have access, but this is a food desert. And there's no fresh fruits and vegetables being sold in these stores. There's potato chips, microwave hamburgers, and most times cigarettes and alcohol, right? Which, you know, it's a corner store. I don't see the corner stores leaving, but what I do see is a bona fide, true grocery store coming to the area of Paramore. That's needed.
Is that something you're working on
and
right
that's
now?
Something that I'm working on.
How long?
It's part of our Paramore Comprehensive Vision Plan. So, yes, that's something that we really need.
Just aside from the stadium, Regina Hill, what do you see bringing about the biggest change in Paramore?
The attitude of the people. That's where the change begins, is the attitude of the people. And I really see the community engaged like never before. The people now are taking stock in their community. And I don't think that had happened in a very long time.
Commissioner Regina Hill, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Construction of a new soccer stadium has opened Orlando's historically black Paramore community to a wave of change. Long-time residents teeter between fear and hope. Some fear they'll be swept up and forgotten. Others hope they'll see better opportunities in the blighted area. But as development sets in Paramore, it's also creeping west towards the Washington Shores and West Lakes communities. 90.7's Renata Sago spoke with residents there who are bracing themselves for change that's headed their way.
Pick a place on the map and chances are Lynn Nicholson's been there or is planning to go. For decades, a travel bug carried him from Washington to New York to Africa. He could have settled anywhere to retire, but fondness led him to one of Orlando's few remaining historic black areas.
I got a good feeling the first time I walked in Paramore.
It was small. Neighbors knew each other. It reminded the 72-year-old of his native Tennessee. But that was more than a decade ago, before the Amway Center was built just footsteps from his townhome, and before the wave of excitement about a new soccer stadium just blocks away.
The way things are going, I mean, everything is being built around us. I mean, those are townhomes look kind of strange when you have these high-rise buildings all around.
Nicholson and his six neighbors, a mix of working and retired homeowners, stand out within a mile-long radius of double-digit unemployment and homelessness.
We're looking at it, wow, this happened to us, the community as a whole, I mean, will it just cease to be? It would just become a commercial endeavor? What about the single-family homes? Will we still be able to remain there? Will we be pushed out?
It's bittersweet change that Nicholson and others embrace at neighborhood planning meetings while disillusioned residents fall silent.
They just don't believe that their input is worthwhile as a whole now. But I believe in sitting at the table, even if I'm mute.
Less than 2 miles from Paramore, Bishop Allen Wiggins is hosting a gospel karaoke night at a youth center in Washington Shores. He's convinced it's 2 decades too late to sit at the table to discuss Paramore's plans.
Paramore is a part of downtown now. It's like trying to jump on a train that's already left.
Wiggins pastors a 700-member congregation at Hope Church. It buys, rehabs, and rents housing to low-income residents. It's the force behind the area's new Walmart and a mixed-income apartment complex that's in planning. Wiggins wants to make sure that his area does not become Paramore. His vision is to make Washington Shores a self-sustaining black neighborhood that's as competitive as Lake Nona, where residents are involved, not threatened by development.
Traditionally, we're not at the table, and we find out the news on the news of what's going to happen as a part of being a part of the process.
He's partnered with Lyft Orlando, a group of business owners working within Paramore's surrounding communities to bring homes and jobs.
We who may not be in Paramore might have to invest in the black entrepreneurs who are trying to upstart businesses as well as other initiatives so that Paramore can be preserved.
That's why Tangia Smichael and 3 other residents formed the West Lakes Council this year. The group represents 7 black neighborhoods surrounding Paramore, including Rock Lake, Clear Lake, and Lake Lorna Dune, where Smichael's parents were some of the first black residents in the 50s.
Change is inevitable. We know it's going to happen. But it does not have to look like downtown. We can figure out a way that everybody can make money, but we don't have to lose every bit of who we are.
The council supports more than 1,000 residents. It's working with Bishop Wiggins, Lyft, and the city to plan what comes in and goes down in the area. But still, Smichael says there's distrust from neighbors about outsiders coming in and whether the area could become another Paramore. Renata Sago, 90.7 News.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. Still to come, Orlando City Soccer Club president and founder Phil Rawlins talks about the new stadium and how it fits into Paramore. Intersection returns after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. One of the biggest physical transformations coming to Paramore is this soccer stadium. It'll be Major League Soccer's 3rd largest stadium, seating 25,500 spectators. The new stadium will close part of Paramore Avenue, and it's also dividing residents. Some say it'll bring new opportunities, while others say it's not what this neighbourhood needs. I met with Orlando City Soccer's president and founder Phil Rawlins at the club offices in downtown Orlando.
Phil, thank you so much for speaking to me.
My pleasure.
Well, first let's talk about the location of this brand new stadium. Why build it in Paramore?
Well, I think, you know, for us, it's about being in the urban core and it's about being in downtown. And the availability of land in downtown just worked out perfectly for us in the Paramore area. It's a great location. It's right in the heart of the sports entertainment district. You know, if you think about it, we have the Dr. Phillips Center at one end of that corridor. At the other end, we've got the Citrus Bowl. And now in between that, we'll have the brand new basketball arena, obviously, for the Magic, and a brand new soccer stadium. So a great sports entertainment corridor, and it's perfectly fit in. And I think it'll be a great key for regeneration there, too.
You grew up in a country which is kind of steeped in the culture and history of soccer, and I guess the United States maybe not so much. So how is it for somebody, you know, coming from that culture where soccer is so much a part of life, and trying to build something, like kind of build this culture from the ground up almost?
I think the US has taken to the culture of soccer very well and very quickly. So it's really not that hard. People are very eager to learn about the culture. They're eager to learn about the game. There's a real thirst and appetite for the game in this country. So it's not as big a step as many may think. And, you know, what people do crave from the sport and enjoy about the sport is its authenticity. They enjoy the authentic, the real aspects of the game that they see in other countries, and they want to replicate that here in the States, and it's great to see.
Getting back to Paramore, it's a historically black neighbourhood. How do you feel, Phil Rawlins, about this new stadium being a catalyst for change in the neighbourhood?
I think it can be very much a catalyst for change. I think it can be a catalyst for economic regeneration and development. We can create jobs. We know that. There'll be over 900 construction jobs created in the building of the stadium. There'll be several hundred jobs on any given game day. We're talking about maybe maybe 30, 40 games a year in that facility. So everything that gets generated there from a job standpoint helps to put money back and into the economy and into Paramore. So we're looking forward to seeing this as a key to regeneration for the Paramore area and more jobs there too.
Having said that, it hasn't been completely plain sailing getting the stadium location. For one thing, it had to be moved a couple blocks because of objections from a church, the Faith Deliverance Temple. I'm wondering, did that have an impact on the design or the size of the stadium?
It really didn't. We were fortunate in so much as that the city had a further parcel of land to the west of the church that was equivalent in size to the parcel to the east of the church. So in essence, all we did was kind of move around the church, let that stay in situ. And we've got really the same footprint. In fact, if anything, the footprint actually got slightly larger on the west side than it was on the east. So from the standpoint of design, it actually helped us.
And the Orlando City Soccer Club wants to incorporate elements of the history and culture of Paramore into the design of the stadium?
Very much so. We consider Paramore to be our neighbours, and it is our neighbourhood. And for that reason, we started a few months ago a Paramore Advisory Council. And that council meets on a regular basis. And we're working with them to ensure that we incorporate the heritage and the history of Paramore into the design of the stadium.
How? How do you do that?
Well, that's what we talk to the council about. Really, we want the community to tell us what they want. Some of the ideas that have come forward so far, I think, are very, very interesting. Certain ideas, for example, are, you know, on the outside of the building, do we describe or depict the history of Paramore, the culture of Paramore, what Paramore's famous for, maybe some of the famous characters that have come through Paramore, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of ideas about interactive displays, whether it be a mural, whether it be inside the stadium, a history of Paramore. Can we work with the local schools to use an education facility to educate them on the history of Paramore and the heritage? There's a lot of options there, and I feel very comfortable that working with our advisory council, we'll come up with something that people are very, very happy with and see that we've really incorporated Paramore into the future.
So these ideas you're talking about, this has all come from the council that's been meeting for the last couple of months?
Yes, in fact, we've been meeting now for over 6 months, and we've been working, a core group of us here at the soccer club have been working with the Paramore Advisory Council to put those plans in place.
You talked about jobs, obviously the construction jobs, they're short-term while the stadium's being built, and good jobs, no doubt, and then the jobs around the stadium, sort of long-term, what kind of jobs are we talking about here?
Well, if you look at our growth, for example, just as a soccer club, we've grown from around 20 people as a minor league team. Today in our front office, we've got 75 people. So we've tripled in terms of size just in the last 18 months. So there's administrative jobs. There's all kinds of jobs within the operation of the club that we'd look to provide in the Paramore community. But obviously on a game day too, there's the maintenance of the field. There's the maintenance of the stadium. There's the operations of the stadium. There's concessions. There's security. There's ushering. There's car parking. There's all the ancillary functions that go around a stadium like this on a game day, which are not inconsiderable. We're talking literally, you know, hundreds of jobs on a game day.
Is there any thought of maybe making it easier for Paramore residents to be first in line for those jobs?
We would love to see Paramore residents be first in line for those jobs, and we'd love to find a way to work with Paramore residents, to advertise them there and to encourage them to come in. We'd like to see the community of Paramore adopt this stadium as being part of their own and part of their culture.
Phil Rawlins, could you talk to me a little bit about some of the initiatives you've got going in terms of youth soccer, other things you're doing in the community?
Yeah, we do a wide range of activities in the community. And let me give you just a couple of examples of what we do. First of all, we worked with the local schools in the area to provide a free summer camp for, particularly for girls, actually, because we want to get girls into the sport of soccer. There's not enough programs for the girls in that community. We want to encourage that. So for the last 2 years now, we've provided free soccer clinics in the community of Paramore, particularly, as we said, focused on girls to help educate them about the game and bring them into the game. The knock-on effect of that is that we have now seen the local schools actually getting together and having a soccer league and reforming their soccer teams that maybe had been abandoned 10, 15 years ago, and the girls actively playing the game. So it's great to see that what you start with, you know, a seed like that grows into something that is a permanent program. Second example I would give you is the futsal courts, or mini soccer fields, if you will, that we've put into the Paramore area. And we opened one just before our first game in March. And that is a mini-sized soccer field that is used by the community right in the heart of Paramore. It's used regularly. It's used every evening by the community down there. And we're using it not just as a soccer field, but also as a learning laboratory. It's a, a place of education, if you will, where we can bring kids every week and we can run programs that not only focus on the sport of soccer, but also talk about wellness, healthy eating, obesity, staying fit, staying in school, being active, all the things that we want to educate our youth to be a part of as they grow into young adults.
One thing I've heard is that soccer is pretty popular, and this is obviously not just in Orlando and Florida, but across the country it's a popular sport for kids. But then once you get beyond that, it's kind of hard to keep people playing it into adulthood and, you know, professionally. Do you see that changing?
Yes, very much so. I mean, if you look at the sport at a youth level today, it's one of the biggest sports in the country with close to 20 million young athletes playing the game. I think the game is changing at the top end of that pyramid. So at the base of the pyramid, we've got a lot of youth playing. At the top end, we've got the pro game. The pro game in this country is growing rapidly at a considerable rate. And the bridge between the two is getting easier to navigate. I think what you'll see in the near future is more and more young athletes choosing soccer as their first sport and choosing to stay in soccer. And whether it's to go to college on a scholarship or whether it's to try the hand at the pros, we'll see more of that as the game grows. And, of course, the awareness of the game with that youth culture grows as well.
I just want to ask about some concerns that some residents have told us about. They've said they're worried about the stadium splitting Paramore because of the location and maybe pushing them out. What do you tell those residents?
Well, I honestly, obviously, don't see it that way at all. I mean, we've taken what is a brownfield site. It was a group of dilapidated and derelict warehouse space, brownfields that was polluted in certain parts as well, that we've remediated. So we've taken what is a very, very urban piece of land, and we're going to give it life generation. We're going to generate jobs through there. We're going to generate economic impact. For example, if you look at our present figures in Major League Soccer, we're attracting close to 6,000 visitors from outside the state of Florida to every game, every MLS game. That means economic impact. That means economic benefit. I see it actually as a catalyst for regeneration and economic development for Paramore. I think that the Paramore residents, certainly that we've worked with and talked to on the Paramore Advisory Council, see it the same way as well, and can't wait to see the stadium open.
You mentioned the idea of the neighbourhood, the soccer club being a neighbour to Paramore. What kind of neighbour do you want to be to Paramore?
Obviously, we want to be the very best neighbour we can be. And I was just meeting with Dr. Jenkins just a few days ago with the Orange County School Board. There's a new school, a new pre through 8th grade school going into the Paramore area. And we were talking with her about how we can be involved in that school. We want to be involved in as many activities as we can. We've already been involved in literally a myriad of community activities. We want to see the neighbours of Paramore to see the soccer club as a good neighbour, a catalyst for good, a catalyst for change, a catalyst for economic development.
And talking about some of those thousands of fans trooping through Paramore, what about things like the lights from the stadium, noise and that kind of thing? Do any of the people you talk to worry about what that's going to do for their quality of life?
In fact, everybody we've talked so far is really supportive of getting the stadium open. They can't wait to see the first game in there and the stadium open later 2016. So now, at least the people we've talked with, the feedback has been very, very positive, and can't wait to see what this is going to do to help the community of Paramore to go forwards.
And the city, they talk about the way Paramore is changing. And if you look at, for example, crime, they say crime is down in Paramore and it's been trending down. But it's still, crime has historically been a problem in Paramore. Are you concerned at all about the safety of fans going to and from games?
We've always got to be concerned about the safety of fans, regardless of where that is, whether that's down at the Citrus Bowl, whether it's down at ESPN, whether it's in Paramore, wherever it is, wherever we play, we take the safety of our fans very, very, very seriously. But that said, I don't think there's a bigger, higher risk to playing where we are in Paramore than there is to playing anywhere else in downtown Orlando. If you looked at the 62,000 that we had at our first game in March, a big, big percentage of those folks walked to the match, walked back from the match right through the middle of Paramore, and never felt at all threatened or at all that they were in danger in any way, shape or form. In fact, many of them do it game in and game out.
So what's the timeline, Phil Rawlins? When will the team play its first game in this brand new stadium?
Well, we're hoping that that'll be towards the end of the 2016 season. So we know it's about a 12 to 14 month build cycle. So if you go out from where we are today in August, we hope that by September, maybe as late as October in 2016, we'll have the stadium open for the last few games of the 2016 season.
That's pretty soon.
Yes, but it's always been that type of timescale. We've always been working with a 12 to 14-month build cycle because a lot of the groundwork's been done. So the contractors, ourselves, the designers feel very confident about that timescale.
Phil Rawlins is the president and founder of the Orlando City Soccer Club. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
During any event downtown, parking is a bear. Even though the city of Orlando is building new sports and entertainment venues, parking remains a hot commodity. That led some business-savvy residents of the Paramore neighbourhood to cash in on the city's lack of spots. But as 90.7's Brendan Byrne reports, it represents a darker side of development in Paramore.
It's game day. The Orlando City Soccer Club hosts the Philadelphia Union at the Citrus Bowl, and the Orlando Predators tackle the Tampa Bay Storm at the Amway Center. It's more than 3 hours until the Lions kick off and the first snap of the Predators game, but the parking garage on South Street and Garland Avenue is filling up fast. With a price tag of $10, some cars are looking for a cheaper option. Drive a bit farther down South Street, past the line of buses outside the arena, and you'll find Gordon Smith. It's hard to miss him. Even if you don't see him, you'll hear him.
Park it! Park it! Park it! Park it!
He's flagging down motorists to park in his empty lot, one he owns with a business partner, and he charges $5 a spot.
Trying to help the city out with parking.
The Citrus Bowl provides parking to fans and has lots outside the gate with about 6,000 spots. But the Orlando City Lions are averaging about 30,000 fans per game.
They don't have the facilities to accommodate the people there at the arena.
Smith's lot fills up fast. Each time the stoplight changes to green, there's a string of cars lining up to park in the grass lot.
Right here, we probably can get in about maybe, I'd say maybe 75, 80 cars.
So let's do the math. 80 cars at $5 a pop, Smith's making $400 a game on that lot. And he's got a similar lot across the street, another $400. And Gordon tells me he's selling spots alongside his house, a few blocks west of here. And he and his partner are in talks to buy another lot. But he's not doing it alone. He's got a staff of two more guys helping flag cars and collect parking fees.
You know, these guys, all of us will be old folks. Matter of fact, he's a 100 disabled vet.
Okay.
And he's another vet. So is
this their kind of their sole job, or they do other things?
Well, right now, this is their thing. They're there. You guys is disabled, right? Yeah, both of them guys. You're disabled, too.
Smith's not the only game in town. Continue walking towards the Citrus Bowl, and there's a lot in just about every empty field, and they're filling up. Malcolm Lee stands at the corner with an orange flag, waving it at any passing car. He's a lifelong resident of the community.
I was born and raised right here in Orlando, Florida.
And how long in Paramore?
Paramore? Mm. I was born and raised here.
Unlike Smith, Lee is selling spots for a landlord. He doesn't handle the money, just flags down cars to get them to park in his boss's lot.
Yeah, we usually do pretty good. You know, everything legal around here, you don't have to worry about nothing.
While Smith's boss may profit from selling spots, Lee says the work highlights the issue the community of Paramore is facing. He says the city has forgotten about them in the purple wave of support for a new soccer team and their stadium.
But they don't have nothing else to help nobody out with, you know. So people gonna do all this kind of stuff, you know. But when I was coming up, man, we ain't had no problems. I wouldn't dare be out here. But you don't have the programs that they used to have for people to, you know, be able to work in Orlando. And it's just not right. Well, you have to get out here and do crap like this, you know.
Still, Lee presses on, hawking parking spots to passing cars.
I don't even like doing this mess. Mm-hmm. But I got to make it some kind of way. I'm not going out and take nothing from nobody.
Brendan Byrne, 90.7 News.
When Intersection returns, Harris Rosen wants to change America, one underserved neighborhood at a time. He's poured millions of dollars into Orlando's Tangelo Park. Now he's bringing his education-first philosophy to Paramore. Intersection returns after a break. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. For more than two decades, kids in Orlando's Tangelo Park neighborhood have been educated through a program that begins at age two and continues through college. The program's funded by hotelier and philanthropist Harris Rosen, and now Rosen's starting a new program in Paramore. I meet Rosen at the site of a new public school just off North Paramore Avenue.
It's not much to look at now, but can you see it in your mind what the school's going to look like?
Oh, Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been able to do that with all of the hotels that we built. I can close my eyes and just imagine. And I can close my eyes now and just see this incredible new school. It is a template. It is going to be replicated throughout the United States when it is demonstrated how successful it is. Start at two, go through eighth grade, all of the youngsters of high school, and provide a college education. This is going to change America. People from all over America will come here and say, we're going to put that in Baltimore. We're going to put that in New Jersey. We're going to put that in New York. We're going to put that in Chicago. There's no doubt in my mind.
Rosen explains that after 20 years of sponsoring the education of Tangelo Park kids, seeing their graduation rates go up and crime go down, he looked around for another neighborhood to replicate the program. The preschool program will be part of the new public school set to open in Paramore in 2017. I asked what he'd learned from Tangelo Park.
This is what I've learned, that there is as much intellectual talent in an underserved community as intellectual talent as there is in the most affluent gated community. And if I'm right, and I suspect I am, all you have to do is go over and talk to these 2 and 3 year olds who can already read and write and talk beautifully and are excited about school. If I'm right, and the United Negro College Fund motto is a mind is a terrible thing to waste, we are wasting hundreds of thousands, millions of minds, and we as a nation cannot afford that anymore. So my dream, and I mentioned this rather presumptuously in Atlanta, I was invited to the Martin Luther King event and spoke to Dr. King, his daughter, and I said, I have a dream. And my dream is that every underserved community, like Paramore, like Tangelo Park, will have a Tangelo Park program where every 2, 3, and 4 year old will have an opportunity to go to school, and every youngster who graduates from high school, and graduation rates are now at 100% from high school, will have an opportunity to go into college, and everything will be paid for. That's my dream. Change America, one little community at a time. And everybody went crazy, but that is my dream. But we have to get other people excited about doing it. There are wealthy individuals, and we do have in America now a conflict. Income inequality, we hear a lot about that. It exists. In a free entrepreneurial, free enterprise kind of capitalist kind of society, some people are going to be a little bit more successful than others. That's perfectly fine. If indeed those who aren't advantaged have an opportunity to get the education that they want. Because I do believe that if there's income inequality, how about making sure that there is not any more educational inequality? So if you level the playing field and every youngster has an opportunity to go to college, suddenly I think you're going to see a shrinking of the disparity between income inequality, between those who are very wealthy, those who are not. Education is the key. Education is the key. And that's what we've proven in Tangelo, and that's what we're going to prove here. These youngsters are going to graduate from high school, no doubt, and they're going to go on to college if they want, no doubt, and everything will be paid for. And it will change the community. Look, we are infusing hope in the neighborhood. It's as simple as that. Youngsters who live in neighborhoods like this say to mom and dad, I want to go to college, but what are the chances? And you know what? If I can't go to college, I'm going to do some other things, and some of those other things are poor choices. But now we're giving them an opportunity.
So, Harris Rosen, what exactly is your foundation going to be doing here at the school in Paramore?
We will be responsible for the salaries and wages of all of the 2 and 3 year old teachers. And there'll be 48 of them, 2 in every class.
That's a lot of teachers.
2 in every class. We believe the ratio of 6 students per teacher is a great ratio, so we're going to maintain that here. It's worked beautifully at Tangelo. So 24 classrooms, 48 teachers, my responsibility. My responsibility to furnish all of the 24 classrooms. My responsibility to make sure that everything that is needed, if they need computers, whatever they need, desks, tables, my responsibility. My responsibility also transitions now over to Jones High School. all of the youngsters who were accepted to vocational school, community college, college, I pay all of their expenses. Happy to do that. My responsibility.
So why focus on early education specifically here in Paramore?
Well, what we discovered, and Sarah Sprinkle is one of the renowned early education experts, and she said, Harris, because initially I was suggesting exactly what you are. Let's just do college scholarships. She said, but the Head Start phenomenon is really something you've got to think about. Let's get these kids off to a good start. Let's start them at 2 years old, because by the time they start kindergarten, we want them to read and write and be articulate. And so I said, okay, Sarah, and it has proven to be so correct. When my kids start kindergarten, after starting school at two, they are so far ahead of their peers who haven't had that opportunity. So, yes, they call it the Head Start program. 2- and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, get them in school, get them excited, and they'll do really well. They will not lose that advantage. That advantage will stay with them right through college.
You were talking about Tangelo Park before. You've seen these kids now graduate from high school.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Go on.
To college.
400 have gone to college. We now have an alumni association, and we do a little banquet for them at one of our hotels. And I have to tell you, it is one of the most moving evenings of my life to listen to these youngsters talk about growing up in Tangelo, talk about studying hard, mom and dad working so hard with me, making sure that I do well in school, making sure that I'm on the right path, working with our guidance counselors. And now I'm in college. First one in my family to ever go to college, and I want to be a doctor, I want to be a nurse, I want to be an accountant, I want to work wherever they want to work. They now can aspire to and realize those dreams, and that's what's so wonderful.
Obviously, there are some differences between Paramore and Tangelo Park.
Absolutely correct.
And what Paramore faces that Tangelo Park didn't is an approaching soccer stadium, and that's guaranteed to bring in some outside development. I mean, there are some big changes in this neighborhood. Do you have any concerns, Harris Rosen, about gentrification as that moves in the early education? Kids of today might be pushed out of Paramore the track?
That is a great question. And yes, we do have concerns about that. We really do. And Mabel Butler has shared with me her great concerns about it. But what do? Do you not do it because you're concerned about something that might happen? So we're moving ahead. We're going to take care of the situation as it exists today. We're going to make sure that these youngsters who live here today have an opportunity to start school at two and to go to college. If at some point in time this neighborhood changes and becomes more affluent, and we're providing scholarships and opportunities to families that really don't need them, we'll have to sit down and think about what to do. But I'm not worried about that now, because now the neighborhood is what it is, and I suspect it will remain this way for a while. However, we are infusing hope, and we're going to have a neighborhood philosophically that's going to change, where people will be proud of living here, where people know that the youngsters have the same opportunities that youngsters have in the more affluent communities. And I think that's what I'm shooting for.
Harris Rosen, you're a hotelier. You have properties that are many miles away from here. You don't need to be doing this. Why are you making these multi-million dollar investments into these poor neighborhoods?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is because it's the right thing to do. My grandparents came from Ukraine, settled in the Lower East Side. It's where I was born. Lived in a relatively poor neighborhood between the East River and Little Italy, the Bowery, and Chinatown. And I knew growing up that education was something that was really absolutely vital if my brother and I were going to move out of the neighborhood. I want to provide that opportunity for every child in this neighborhood, in Tangelo Park, and hopefully we can encourage other people to do the same thing throughout America. Look, if we had a Tangelo Park program in Baltimore, in St. Louis, in Ferguson, in Chicago, I know in my heart of hearts that we would change those communities. I know we would, because we would be giving those families and those children hope, and they would opt to go to college and be successful. There's no doubt in my mind. So I do it because I'm saying thank you, God, for all of the opportunities that I have. I'm doing it because I love America, and I am an example of the American dream, and I want others to be able to have their dreams and to be able to achieve them also.
Are there other projects, other communities in Florida or elsewhere that you personally want to invest in?
You know, Matt, we work in Haiti. We've been working in Haiti for a long time. We built a Rosen College. We have a Jewish community center. We're doing the Tangelo Park and now the Paramore program. There is a limit to what I can devote my time, energy, and resources to. But I'm not counting anything out. So we'll see. My hope and my prayer is that we can encourage other wealthy individuals, corporations, foundations, to adopt a neighborhood also. I want the private sector to step forward and say, I know that some perceive us as being greedy and selfish, but we can demonstrate that we love America and we care about our youth, and we're going to adopt a community near our headquarters, near where we live, to demonstrate that we really care about America.
Is this a conversation you actually have with folks, you know, when you meet your peers, your fellow millionaires?
You'd be surprised how many folks I've spoken to. Here's the problem. The question I'm asked by large corporations and other individuals, Harris, how long do we do it? And my answer used to be in perpetuity, but I could see people close down immediately. So what I now say is you do it until the neighborhood transitions into a neighborhood where the youngsters have that opportunity to go to college because their parents have the resources. Well, how long will that take? I don't know. And that's a turnoff to some. They want a closure. They want to know, I'll invest this much money, and at this point in time, it's over. But I'm on radio now. It might not be over for a long time. And some people just don't have the mindset to understand and to agree to do something like that, which is a little bit sad. But the more successful we are, and listen, this is why we're doing Paramore. We're doing it because it's the right thing, but we're also doing it because, I don't know if you've ever been to Tangelo, but it's kind of a nice little rural neighborhood right off Sand Lake Road. This is a different environment. This is urban. This is tough. This is Chicago. This is Detroit. This is Baltimore. And if we can demonstrate that we can have the same success here, maybe others will say, you know, we looked at Tangelo, kind of a small little community, cute. This, right in the middle of downtown Orlando, looks just like the neighborhood that we're thinking about. Let's do it. Now, we have had some folks in California respond positively. We have had the Glick Foundation in Indianapolis respond. So maybe, look, before I die, I want to see 50, 75 communities with a Tangelo Park program.
I imagine you're going to be spending quite a bit more time in Paramore in the coming years then.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think in the 21 years, I think I missed one meeting at Tangelo Park because that's my nature. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it as best I can. I don't like to just write a check and then disappear.
Harris Rosen, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Matt.
And finally, Paramore has a reputation for being a high crime area. But is that reputation deserved? And will a new stadium and community investment reduce crime or just push it out of Paramore? Well, I'm joined in the studio by 90.7's health reporter, Abe Abarai. Abe, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So you went on a police ride-along in Paramore to get a first-hand look at the neighborhood. Tell us about that ride-along.
I spent several hours riding with Lieutenant Brian Donahue of the Orlando Police Department. He's one of the watch commanders responsible for the Paramore area. We were heading down Orange Blossom Trail and South Street when Donahue pointed this out.
First thing I want to do is draw your attention to what's happening here on the left. You see the construction site with the fence up and the tape around it. We're actually moving our police headquarters further into the Paramore area. Kind of from one side to the other, but we're helping revitalize along the Orange Blossom Trail corridor.
Donahue's worked as a bike officer, a patrol officer, and an undercover vice officer in Paramore at various points during his 16-year career. He pointed out an apartment complex in the neighborhood. When he started, all calls from that complex were two-person calls. That is, a minimum of two officers showed up because of the threat of violence to officers. Now, though, things are different. He feels safe when he's in Paramore and says the neighborhood should be better known for its history and the pride of its residents have.
I don't I don't think you're in the worst neighborhood in Central Florida.
So, Abe, what kind of police calls are typical in Paramore?
Well, on the day of the ride-along, there were 330 911 calls. There was one call for a Signal Zero, and that's an alert for an armed suspect or some other reason for police to be cautious. Outside of traffic stops and accidents, the most common calls were for suspicious persons, some unknown trouble, and general disturbance. And other than that, the police were called for 3 fights and 4 attempted suicides and 9 drug violations in that 24-hour span.
So, Abe, that's just one day. What do the numbers, though, tell us historically about crime in Paramore?
Well, the numbers tell 2 stories. Over the last 10 years, Orlando installed 86 cameras in Paramore. Juvenile crime is down by 77%, and overall crime is down by 40%. Here's Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer talking about the Paramore Kid Zone.
One of the kids at PKZ came up to me a couple years ago and said, Mayor, I want you to know there are no gangs in Paramore. And that wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago. There used to be a gang south of church and north of church, so the kids north couldn't travel south of Church Street and vice versa.
Now, it's true that if you look at violent crime 10 years ago in Paramore compared to today, violent crime is also down. But if you look at violent crime, murder, kidnapping, rape, robberies, and aggravated assaults over the last 5 years, they've actually been trending up about 100 more incidents in 2014 compared to 2010. And to be clear, it's still fewer incidents than 10 years ago.
So why has violent crime gone up in the last 5 years?
Well, the number of murders is pretty steady. It's 1 to 3 a year since 2010. Rape's actually down in the last year, although it's hard to say if it'll hold for this year. The biggest increases have been in robberies and aggravated assaults.
Hey, Babarai, what do residents say about crime in the Paramore area?
Let's hear from a few. Ricky Hawks is a father and a longtime Paramore resident. I met him while I grabbed a burger and fries at Cafe Express, and that's right across from where the new MLS stadium is going.
And the neighborhood has always been crime-ridden, drug-ridden, but everybody's not that person.
Now, he says you can be safe by knowing the area and that residents look out for one another. And I met Lawrence Evans by a Lynx bus stop. He says the reputation for crime is undeserved.
It's minimal crime. People are probably doing drugs, but they're doing it in their own house or on their own little parcel of land and not disturbing anyone. It's pretty peaceful area.
So how's this new soccer stadium going to change things?
The police officer I did the ride-along with says it will help reduce crime, and so do some of the residents.
Bring the stadium, because if that stadium don't come, it'd be the same old ground here, you know what I'm saying? Well, you know. Bring the stadium. It brings up Paramore and downtown.
Hey, Babarai, is there a link, though, between crime and health?
There is. According to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, living in an area that isn't safe, and that can be whether it's real or perceived, it affects your health. And the most obvious reason is it's hard to get out and exercise if you don't feel safe getting outside. This is 36-year-old Tawana Lucas. She doesn't want to see the stadium, but here's what she wants to see instead.
I just want to see more housing, more activity for the kids, more activity for us as grown people. We could go out somewhere and hang out and have us a good time, you know, without all the violence and the busting and the fighting and the shooting and stuff. It's more to life than just going to work and coming home and going to school and coming home.
So if the soccer stadium comes in and, as some have suggested, revitalizes the neighborhood and reduces crime in Paramore, would that crime just be pushed elsewhere?
That's a tough question. Some of the residents I've spoken with are worried that the entire community is going to be pushed out, specifically to Pine Hills or across OBT, and they point to Orlando's history of removing African-American Jonestown residents and putting them into public housing in Paramore.
Abe Abaraya is the health reporter for 90.7 News. Abe, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Florida Hospital. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. What do you think about the changes taking place in Paramore? You can join us on Friday morning at 9 for the weekly news roundtable. We'll be taking your calls. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.